Okay, this is week four of our wonderful database class, and tonight what we're going to be doing, no comments like that. Tonight what we're going to do is we're going to start out and we're going to begin by going through the work that you did as far as your personal databases, okay, and the thought processes that you came up with. You should have come in today with something written up where you're talking about, it was basically going through what are the questions you want to answer and those sorts of things. Then after that, what we're going to do is you're going to do all four here, and then we have the ones from Kathy and Sandra as well. And so I've printed those out, and we'll be reflecting on those as well. And what I'm going to do tonight, and we are going to make sure that everybody can hear everybody, and so when it comes time for actual discussion, what I'd like to do is actually pass this back and forth, if that's okay. Is that okay with you folks? Okay? Yeah, I mean... No, that's not okay? Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. What we can do is, then what we'll do is we'll go into it slowly. And in going into it slowly, that means that for while we're discussing our stuff, in other words, while you four are discussing what you're doing, I'll simply stand in front of you so that I can get somewhat of a read. But when we're dealing with Sandra and Kathy, what we want to do is make sure they get as much feedback as possible. So what we might do is get a little close, pass around. Okay, well, Sandra O'Brien and Kathy Getch they're actually distant educators or distant students, and they're not coming to class. And so what we're doing is they're taking it from a distance, they're doing the assignments, they're listening to the class online. And hi there, hope you're enjoying this. And and so that's who they are. And so they're kind of like your phantom classmates that you get to talk to and you got to respond to while you were online. It was kind of interesting to see those new names come in, wasn't it, and get their points of view as well. Before we begin, are there any questions? No questions? Okay. Well, let's begin. Who would like to start to discuss the things that they would like to do with their personal database? Anyone? Okay. You want to start? Go ahead. And what we'll be doing is you're going to be talking about how you define... Rob's going to start out, and you're going to talk about how you're defining the problem, what has been... How has it been done in the past, and then what needs to be addressed, and then basically how you're going to address it. Okay?
Okay, well, my problem is that each spring, usually the first week of May, on a Friday, we have all about 380 students sign up for different activities that are outside activities or inside, depending on what it is. And it's basically a school-wide field day. And the premise of this is that we want to expose kids to activities they would not traditionally do. And so with help of teachers and community people, we get this list of usually between about 15 and 17 activities.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is collection of all the data of what classes the kids would like to do. And so we give them their first and second choice and the morning and afternoon activities, so we collect that. But not only do we have to collect that data, we also have to collect who's teaching it, where that activity is going to be located at, and all the different things, along with all of the information for outside facilities, like if we go to the Roller Dome in Cedar Falls, or if we come to UNI for a tour, or if we go to batting cages. So we have all that information too. And we also have to keep in mind that the kids have to pay some of this because some of it does cost them money. So we're keeping track of what costs, what activities cost a certain amount of dollars, who's paid, who hasn't paid. And so those are the big problems that we face. And the thing at the end is we also have to be able to produce a roster for each teacher to have so they can take it and go to their activity and know who they have and who they don't have. And this is a combination of 6th, 7th, 8th graders. And so even though I teach 8th grade, I might have 6th graders. I have no clue who they are because I don't have them in class. And so that's what the activity is. So how has it been done in the past? Well, our secretary in the office has done all of it. And she's now by herself because they got rid of one secretary, and she basically told us that we had to do it. And
That was 2 years ago because you had to do it last year, right?
Well... Last year, she helped with a little bit of the data entry. I did most of the breakdown and making reports for the different people. But this year, she just basically said, "You're in charge of it, and I don't want to do anything about it. It's all yours." And so how I did it last year is, I mean, lots of Excels. Set an Excel for each activity.
An Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I also had Excels for all the different teachers. I had one Excel for all the contact information. And it just was very overwhelming with all these different spreadsheets. I think I had 32 of them when I got all done with them.
Mm.
So I hope to use Access to make this a lot simpler, to make it more organized, to make it so that I can make reports to meet my specific needs. And the example I give in my paper is that the nurse, she doesn't care about where all the kids go. She just wants to know where her kids with medical concerns go. So it would be really nice to have a field be medical concerns and then sort it according to which kids have medical concerns and just give her that list. The principal doesn't really care where they're going. He just wants to be able to have a list of where they're going at certain times in case he needs to contact or get a hold of them. And so with Access, it should be a lot easier. And then there's one part that I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. We're going to try is to have it so the kids sign up online so that they can go to their technology class and actually enter what class they want to take. So that's one less step I have to do, and plus they're going to learn how to use technology also.
Of course, the issue, unless you're going to use drop-down menus, the issue is how well can they spell, right?
Exactly. and the other thing the other issue I have is how am I going to regulate, like, for example, canoeing can only be 24 people. So is it a first-come, first-served basis? Do I give, preference to 8th graders? Do I, and so on. So I don't know how I'm going to do that yet, but figure something out.
Well, even just because they enter it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get it.
Yeah, exactly. I guess because the way we've done it in the past is they fill out a piece of paper and then two teachers sit down in an afternoon and say this person gets this, this one gets this, and these kind of go around the room until they're full. But on the other hand, and then I always ask, how do you do that to make sure it's fair? It's very random. They're like, well, we really don't. We just kind of say, well, I know this kid's never done canoeing before, so we'll put him in there. And so it is kind of fair, but it kind of isn't. So if there's any way that you could make it truly random, then the kids wouldn't, you could blame it on the computer, not us.
Well, as long as it's connected to a computer, you can always blame it on the computer. And they know that they entered it on a computer, so that would work.
It'd be nice and also to just be able to send access to all the teachers, because they all have it on their computers, or like most of them do, whether or not they can use it or not. But you could at least say, hey, it's online. Hey, look at it. Maybe encourage them to.
Do you see any problems, potential problems? You mentioned a couple.
There's going to be 385 students' names in that one database, which is quite a bit. Again, trying to figure out how to identify what activity each kid's going to get. Also, just the other problem is just getting every kid to sign up, because with absences and kids gone, it's always a headache because we always miss a few kids.
Okay. So your questions, you identify the questions as being what are they going to take, where are they going to go, how are you going to sort it, and that sort of thing, and then you come up with some ideas as to how to address the reports. Any comments that anybody wants to make about this? Because, let's give them some feedback. Places where you think there may be problems coming up, unforeseen problems, places that you think sound like he's got it pretty well handled. What do you think? Sounds good. That's good. Okay.
Yeah, it sounds. It really does sound good. It's just a matter of, wow, that's a lot of people. Wow, that's a lot of activities. Wow, that's a lot of the numbers to juggle. And so, I'm just trying to think again. How can you get the student information in there?
I thought about delegating it and saying, hey, you know what? Each homeroom, you have to put your information in Excel. Because I can import it into Access through Excel. But again, that would be kind of a challenge for some of the teachers that don't want to use Excel ever.
Right.
But, if they could do that for me, it would be much easier.
Could you set up a form on one laptop and send the laptop around to various classrooms? I can create the forms where you can input information in through that. So you could have a standard interface on a form, with drop-down menus and names. And set along...
I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah, because I
don't know the limitations of forms all the way yet, so I don't know how well that would work.
If I put all students in as a record and just put made a simple form, all they had to do was find their name on a drop down menu, find their activity on a drop down menu, morning and afternoon, and I could send that around.
Of course, if you've got all the students with all their names on a drop-down menu, that means you've entered every single student, and you might as well do it anyway.
Well, but that is something that, you know, I guess I shouldn't say this, but I mean, I can just download this in Excel already because I have those through my database for grades. So, I mean, I already have that done, actually. So, I mean, it wouldn't be that big a deal. But the only problem is that kids can sign other kids up and mess with their stuff.
That is an issue.
That is an issue.
Okay.
I guess you can set it up where they have to type in their own name. You don't
That's
have
true.
Any typing at all. You just set up a framework for it all. And the information's going around, you know, to various classes. You can set it up where they may have to do something like, who's your homeroom teacher?
Yeah. I guess that's true.
Okay. Anybody else? Any other comments that we want to make about that?
Hey.
You know, that's going to be an exciting one to come up with.
Yeah,
that really is. Who would like to go secondly? You want to do it? Tell us about your coffee shop.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Mine's not as exciting as his, but the only thing I can think of would be problems with keeping track of all the inventory.
Wait. Start out and tell us. These are the questions we need to have answered. And I'm sure you've written the whole thing up based upon those questions.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. I know that.
As you can see, I guess the problem... I don't know, it would be just where...
What's the overall... I mean, why are you putting this database together?
More for efficiency.
Well, efficiency of what? I mean, pretend I don't know anything about your mother's coffee shop.
To help my mom be efficient in keeping track of everything that's coming to the store, what's going out, how much profit she's making.
So it's inventory?
Yeah.
Okay. And income?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you sat down and talked to her about this?
No.
Okay. So you're kind of... Because she'd give you a lot of good insight, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. So based upon this, it says... we talk about what's the problem that you're trying to solve, and the problem you're trying to solve is what? It doesn't necessarily mean it's something that's going wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, if painting a wall is a problem, it's a situation that you have to confront, something you want to do, and the only way you confront it is by painting the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what is the problem that you're trying to address? If you can't define the problem, you can't make a database. Okay, so the answer is that the problem is the inventory control. You're trying to keep track of the inventory.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the problem. I know. I'm going down this list. I want to make sure that we have that. It says. So, what are some of the questions that need to be answered?
Well, what's your product? Where is it coming from? How much do you need? How much are you selling of that product? Is it working in the store? Is it not? How much are you making off of that product? What adjustments do you need to make with certain products and how much profit you're making?
Okay, so there's a lot of good questions there. Okay. And how has it been done in the past?
Well, since we just opened, I'm not really sure. But
you might want to call her and ask.
Yeah. I think for her, she just does the normal, because I know my mom and she's not a big technological person.
That's where you come in.
Yes. I made her get a zip drive. She didn't have one of the jump drive things. But, so I think what she does is just uses a lot of just the Excel database, like spreadsheets. She's the flat and just has a ton of them. And so it'd be nice to be more efficient and make it easier for her and have, you know, instead of having to look up all these different things, you know, just being able to do it all at once.
Okay. And, The problems that she's had in the past, I understand that she's only been open for a month. And you might talk to her about that so you can get these problems. You know, when you're dealing with a client, it's important to know that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fortunately, Rob is his own client, so he can ask himself. He can say, okay, Rob, now what's the problem here? So he can do that. Can you think of any kinds of problems that she might have had or would have if she didn't have your wonderful database?
There being so much, just having to put in stuff that there could be, you know, either error or, I don't know,
maybe losing things, and having to calculate things, and
just having to do a lot of stuff, and like it leaves more room for human error.
Okay, and then to address those problems, what are some of the things you might do in your database to help address those problems, the human error problems?
Well, I like how what we recommend forms today, how you could already have in, you know, just a simple calculation where it does it for you automatically. You don't have to worry about plugging it all in and doing things like that. And where you can have, you know, you can just type in a simple, like even number, and then that information from the number pops up, and you don't have to worry about looking at all the information for a specific item.
Of course, that's coming from another table, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The multiple
table, yes. Yeah. And then the personal database, which is a flat database,
yes,
won't necessarily have those capabilities, but it's good that you're thinking ahead for those other possibilities. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, that's it.
Okay, any comments anybody has about what she's doing and places you might see where problems might come in or benefits or what?
Does it already or not, but just the output I think would be the hard thing, to know exactly how much she's selling of a certain thing. I don't know if she's got like some type of electronic checkout or not, but it's pretty easy to keep track of what's coming in, because you'll have, you know, your shipment in, you'll know X amount of this and X amount of that, but then of course that's a big number compared to the small amount going out at one time.
And in all reality, that what you create may or may not be something that she's actually going to be used on a day-to-day basis, but it's a good problem to work with. Hopefully you can work it out, and you'll become the maven for databases, and you'll be able to make an incredible one that she'll use daily. But anything else? Any other comments anybody wants to make?
No, that was the one concern I had, too, was how are you going to link the cash register of sorts to the database.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing I was worried about.
You got any ideas? Yummy? You've been pretty quiet.
I think I do not have any additional opinion.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Crumb.
Uh-oh.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like the most nervous I think I've ever been this week.
Why?
I'm under the spot.
You are.
That thing is really...
Is this a problem, am I putting the microphone like this?
No, it's just that now all my ridiculous things that I say are stored somewhere.
Yes, for the world to listen to, so don't be stupid.
That's tough. My problem, my project is creating a portfolio, process, platform. Any more P words?
That's punctuality.
Punctuality.
A plethora of platforms.
A plethora of platforms. But I'm trying to create an electronic format so that teachers can input artifacts, information, standards, connections.
Tell us a little bit more about the needs of the portfolio.
The needs of the portfolio. Well, the problem that I'm trying to solve right now is I feel that there are different purposes for portfolios. And that currently, when you make one portfolio, it's usually for one purpose. But there's multiple purposes out there. And so if we could come up with one interface where they're entering in information, that they could store everything from a learning portfolio, project portfolio, to a performance portfolio. It could all be stored in one place, but then exported out to meet the different audience's needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out how I can do that. And then also this notion of time, how some stuff that I worked on when I was a freshman that I have in my portfolio right now, I don't want in there anymore. So now I have to go and then delete all of that. But with this method, what I'm thinking is that you can just not have it selected. So you can still have it stored somewhere, because who knows that you may need that later on.
Mm-hmm.
So you can still have it stored, but not necessarily going through all the trouble of deleting things.
Okay.
And having to redo your portfolio. This way you can just click which artifacts you would like to have.
And the way you've been keeping track of all this in the past has been what?
With a pioneering format known as Electronic Professional Teaching Portfolios, which is a template that Dr. Zeitz developed, and then I came along and we collaborated on making it a very, it's really pioneering type of.
Does that mean crude or?
Pioneering is the only word I'm going to go with. Take it whatever way. But, and so, yeah, how has it been done? Kind of like what I was talking about, and the problem is that one electronic format for one purpose for the portfolio.
Okay. And so, you've got your needs that you're going to have. What are you going to do with the database to make all that work? What kind of reports and things like that?
With the flat database, I am struggling with this part of the assignment, the personal one, because I'm focused on the relational aspect of it right now. As far as...
Callie knows about the art of portfolios.
Yeah, the personal one could be done. I guess I forgot your question.
Well, actually, let me ask, what's your table going to hold? What's the topic of your table that you're going to be using in the personal database?
It's going to be artifacts. It's going to be similar to the matrix, mm-hmm. the electronic, the standards matrix. I'm going to elaborate on it just a little bit, but beyond that, I don't know. It's going to be similar to that.
Good. Anybody have any comments about the process? You see anything, places where you might have problems?
Issues? It's all your artifacts, so they're all going to be, like when you say an artifact, I mean, as I'm teaching, I get artifacts that I get digitalized, all of it. I mean, what if I have a wonderful assignment that I had that I'm going to scan it in? I guess I don't see what you mean by artifacts.
Yeah. Artifact has two components, one the actual artifact itself, then also a reflection on that artifact, which is in most part the thing that the teacher would focus on, but then having that actual artifact for a reviewer to look at is necessary. And with the electronic format, one of the things is that you're going to have to somehow put it into a digital format. And that can involve scanning, taking a picture of it. So.
Okay. Good. Any other comments? Okay, Yami, tell us about what you're going to do.
I'm going to work with the language laboratory, as you suggested me at the time. After I have thought about that, it's very wonderful if I make the database of scheduling, for example. And the question should be answered is, how can I manage this lab so that the students can get good education, especially in English and Arabic as the focus of the language that should be taught in language laboratory. And then how I can manage the need of the teacher for teaching and the students as learners. I mean that how can I think about the time so that they can come together in the classroom? Because the problems, the previous problem that I faced at the time about the rooms in the language laboratory, there were only three rooms. If there are many students who come to learn about the languages over there, it's difficult for me to manage about the class. So how I can think about the time and the kind of the program, for example, reading or listening or speaking, something like that, so that the teacher who will teach reading, for example, in what kind of class, so that I make like 11 fields of this project. The first one is number and the instructor, because as long as I see in that university there are at least 75 instructor, English instructor and Arabic instructor. So if I select them on the 25 persons, how can I select? What is the standard for me to select them?
Mm-hmm.
So about the program, as usual, we implement about the two kind of programs, English and Arabic. So English consists of many levels, elementary, intermediate, and advanced, as well as Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem will come up, who can teach elementary one or elementary two, intermediate, advanced, and so on. And about the courses, so I'm thinking about there are four skills in language, listening, reading, speaking, and writing, plus grammar. So as second language learners, they have to learn about the grammar. So I'm thinking about the kind of course. So there are five kind of courses should be taught in this language laboratory. And the day or time, place, and the facility should I prepare in that room. Something like not only computer, but the students need audio room or audiovisual room, including multimedia room. So in that in three classes, classrooms, I mean, I have to think about which one should be provided as a multimedia, as audio room or audiovisual rooms. And then I'm thinking about in my university there are five faculty. So, you know, at the first year of the students come to the university, they have to be trained the languages, English and Arabic, for the whole of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, during 1 year. So each faculty must have students who learn English and Arabic in the language laboratory. So I'm thinking about the students' background. This is from education, Faculty of Education, or Law, Faculty of Law, or Faculty of Literature. Because as long as my experience, we cannot place them in the same class. For example, the student from Faculty of Education and the student from Faculty of Religion, for example, we can't put them together in one class because they have special needs or different orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So it is different if we teach the student from Faculty of Education and the student from Faculty of Literature or Faculty of Religions.
Okay, so you've identified the problem, and in the past, how have you done this?
The problem in the past, as long as I see, about the managing classroom and classify students. So we do not have any standard to place them in elementary one or intermediate or advanced.
But no, I asked, how have you done it in the past? How have you organized this in the past?
I organized that on the past because something like if there is a problem about the schedule, I invite all of the instructor and talk about the time, the available time for them to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And then ask about the students, the available time for the students. So I connect the need of the teacher and the students about the time, and then I make a new schedule.
So you've been doing it all manually?
Yes.
Okay. And so the needs that you have, that what kind of reports and things like that do you have to come out with to address your needs?
Something like schedule.
Okay.
So you're talking about the time, the day, the kind of the course, the level.
So you'll have a schedule, a weekly schedule that will go up on your wall.
Yes.
Now, will you have a schedule that goes out to the professors as well?
Yes.
Okay, so those are two schedules. What's your flat database going to be? Such as he's doing portfolios for his flat database. Which one's your flat database, Kelly? So product.
Yeah.
Product is going to be your flat database. And your flat database is going to be students. Okay? So they each have a flat database. What's your flat database going to be for this personal one?
Students, I think. Students.
But you're not dealing with students. What you're dealing with is you're dealing with professors and you're dealing with classes. The students really wouldn't be in your database, would they?
Because what I arrange about the schedule is for students.
But it's the number of students, isn't it? Yes. I mean, do they come in with a class of students, right?
The class of the students.
So basically you know that, you know, Abu bin Muhammad is coming in and he has 27 students. So the names of the students isn't that important, but his name is important.
The amount of the students.
Right, so just the number.
The number.
So when you talk about the flat database, I see you started one here. It looks like it's based on the instructors.
The number, I just come up with the number of the students. So if the instructor, like Abdul Muiz, he has like 15 students
mm-hmm.
in the classroom.
Okay.
So,
so what? Well, yeah, he's got his started. he already has his laid out. He's got the 29 records. So that's even better. Ooh. Okay. Okay, so there's a lot of issues. Now, the important thing to remember is that you're going to be doing it with tables. So what you might have is you might have one table which is going to be your professors. Another table which would be, no, not yet. Okay, because the students is just going to be number. But one table might be the professors. So you've got 20, how many professors do you have? You said five?
29.
Oh, good. Okay, good. So you've got 29 professors, right? And then each of those professors is teaching a course, right? So you might have another table that would be courses. And you might have another table which is scheduled. You see? And we'll sit down and talk about what fields you might put in there. And now that's a real important thing. When you're talking about inventory, and the interesting thing is we got to look at your inventory and how many different tables you're going to be using. Is it just inventory? You might have another table of distributors. You might have another table of customers. So we need to have, I think it's at least three tables that you need to have. You've got a ton of tables you can figure yours out with portfolio and what else? Ultimately, when you do this, you're going to have multiple tables.
I had the plan for six.
Six?
Two for each format of table.
I'm not talking forms. I'm talking tables.
Yeah.
So in other words, we have one table, which is going to be all the artifacts. Mm-hmm. What's another table?
It's going to be the...
Standards
matrix, where it's going to have the ability to actually have the standard come down in a drop-down type of a menu like I've seen done in these.
Okay, but what I'm saying is that you have a table where it would say standard,
yeah.
One, standard. Standard, and then next to it would have the description?
Yeah, and you can have a...
Okay.
And you can input drop-down, yes, no...
Right, but it would go out and we get that information.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. And then you're talking about teachers,
I have
place.
I got three right now. I have student info,
Then I'd also have the overall contact information of the outside people. And then I'd also have an actual table for the activity itself. So they would have, you know, maybe we'd have the costs in there. Maybe you'd have what you need to bring.
Address, contact information, contact person.
Yeah, so that right. So that when a teacher goes, I can give them a report of their students they have. And I can also give them a report of where they're going, when the transportation's going to leave, when the bus is going to pick them up, things like that.
And the principal probably wants a list of where everybody's going, so you'll be able to give them a report of that.
Yeah, and then that's just the beauty of access, that you can just hopefully print out what you need. You know, right. If a teacher comes to you and says, I just want to know the list of my kids. Well, you want to know what they're going to do in the afternoon? No, I'm not teaching in the afternoon. I just want to know who I have in the morning. Mm-hmm. Then I'm just producing one.
Great. Okay. Now we have two more sets. And what we're going to do, and I know you just love being being recorded on this, but this is to help our folks in the field. What I'd like everybody to do is come on up here. I've got four chairs. And we're going to make a circle here. Okay, could you pass these out, please? And could you pass these out so everybody gets one? Yeah, one for me. Thank you. Okay, now we're sitting at the front of the classroom. Thank you very much. And was there an extra one? Okay. Oh, we should have one of each. Okay. Okay. Oh, there we go. I've got the other one over here. So, have a seat over here. The reason we're sitting in the middle here is because we are going to pass this around, because we're going to be getting feedback. Move on in. We're going to be giving feedback to Kathy and Sandra about their ideas. And why don't you spend a little bit of time reading Kathy's or Sandra's first. That's one where she's got a whole family of brothers and sisters. Okay, now what I'd like to do is we're going to talk about this as an idea for a database. Important thing is that as we talk about this, obviously they're not here to give us feedback. But what we want to do is we want to give them feedback about what they did. Important thing to think about is we want to think about this as both, this assignment, it's a flat database. Next assignment, it's going to be a relational database, meaning it has to have multiple tables. And so make sure you pay attention to that. Would anybody like to, what do you think about this as a database, considering both of those ideas, both of those assignments? The first part. Were you just spacing out or what? Okay, listen carefully. We're going to try this again for those of us who have to listen a little harder. The idea is that we are doing, this database is going to be a flat database for the first one, the personal database, and the expanded personal database is going to be a relational database. Now, it's important that when you take a look at this as to whether it's going, this is basically a flat database or if it's a relational database or could be turned into a relational database. And so we need some feedback on how what you feel about the way it's set up right now. Who would like to start? And the key is that you have to hold the microphone. I'm just going to hand it to you, and then you talk on the microphone. Okay? You all have dulcet voices. It's beautiful. Okay, who would like to begin? He always talks first. Here we go.
I see it as...
First of all, say hi to Sandra.
Hi, Sandra. What's going on? I see this as an excellent flat database with the information being stored like you identified, first name, last name, street address, and just cataloging all those individuals. I do have a question as to how, and maybe the group in front of me will be able to answer, this will be turned into a relational database. But as far as a flat one, I see it as being an excellent idea, serving a definite need. I get, my concern is along the relational lines. So, anyone?
Well, technically, this is a relational database since it's about our family, isn't it?
Well played, sir.
I'm
well
sorry.
Played.
Pass it along.
Well
played.
Well, you got any ideas or?
Well, I think you could just. This is Rob, by the way, Sandra. This is pretty cool because I have a big family also. But I think that you can maybe make it in just more than just birthdays or anniversaries. I mean, if you expand it to something, I don't know, maybe who's got whose name for Christmas and stuff like that, then you can make it more relational. So it's just my family does that for Christmas. We pick names. And then my wife is the keeper of the master list. And so everybody's constantly calling her, who do I have for Christmas? Who do I have for Christmas? So if you could do this somehow and maybe tie some more things on it, and then, heck, just make your own website and post it. And then everybody could log in and see who they have for Christmas. Or, you know, maybe someone's getting married, so instead of making all the labels for the wedding invitations, you could download all of it and you can make it easy for other people. So I don't know. But remember, we're all computer nerds.
Okay, so where would that other table, what would be in another table?
Maybe, you know, one table, you know, maybe you would have something like, you know, annual events, like birthdays, anniversaries, everything that's, you know, everything that's yearly. Maybe another table would be something that happens periodically to keep track of. So if you have two or three weddings coming down the road, one this year and one next year, maybe you could, you know, make a table of some. It would take some more thinking and to think through it. But I think the way you'd have to do it is you have to tie some other type of information in there to make it more relational.
Okay.
So,
what do you think, Kelly?
Is that better? Okay. I agree with Andy. I think it's a really good personal database, but as far as I don't really know how you turn it into a relational database, and I know Rob had some good ideas. I don't really have any that I can think of right now to add on to it, but that's my only concern would be to turn it into a relational database. But I don't know.
Okay. Do you have anything you want to add, Naomi? What would you like to add?
Looking at this plan, it's very, it's a brilliant plan, I think. But I would like to suggest if the field should be provided here, including education, because in my mind, educational background is very important. When I see someone probably academically, so I need to know about the education, probably graduated from undergraduate or master program or PhD program, something like that.
One of the things, all of these ideas actually deal with, it's all information you could put on the same table, isn't it? They're all just fields you could keep adding. You have something, you have an idea?
For the relational aspect, it says that you have a field for just spouse, but then a spouse could have different contact information, hopefully not necessarily addresses and such, but maybe a spouse's phone number, spouse's email, and a spouse's birthday, so that you could, hopefully it's not a one-to-many relationship, but it would be someone on one table, then on another table you could store their spouse's personal information.
So they wouldn't be considered a relative, the spouse? The spouse would be in the relative
for
database.
Yes, it is. We are going to have to split Solomon's baby. We're going to have to call them non-relatives for this part of the assignment. But then when it becomes the relational database, we can bring them back into the family. I know it's crude, but just an idea.
You know, the thing is that for the other table, the key with the other table, I mean, when you're talking, you want things that don't have layover or overlap. Now you talk about, Rob, when you talk about your database, you're talking about having teachers and students. Now, there are no teachers who are students, and there's no information that a teacher has that a student would have unless they lived on the same street or something like that. And then you also have activities. So all of those are very distinct. When we talk about the spouses, I'll tell you what, just for fun, let's pretend that they want to consider the spouses as relatives. Okay, so just for fun, if we've got the spouses, what you need to do is you need to think of maybe more than simply this being a database of family. Perhaps this could be a database for planning events. And you might have another table that would have places where you would have these events. I mean, you know, like maybe you'd have an Elks Club in Cedar Falls, and you'd have American Veterans Club in Marshalltown. And, you know, in other words, these would be the places. And then what you would do is you could have it so you'd have number of people that would be going there. I can't think of anything else, but like you all said, it's a really good database, but the problem is turning it into a relational database where you'll have other issues, you know, other topics. Okay? Any questions on that one? Okay, let's go over to Kathy's. Good luck on that, Sandra, and remember, we're all online. Okay, Kathy? Why doesn't everybody read Kathy's? Hers is all about a collection of model trains. Okay, so we'll take a look at this. Here's another one that has to do with a collection of ideas. And we're going to start with Callie, and she's going to give us her feedback on this.
And then we're going to Yaomi.
Okay, I don't know if you guys can help me understand it, but will it first be sorted, like each different table would be the type, the manufacturer, and the road number? Is that...
Well, let's not talk about tables yet. I mean, what's your record going to look like?
Well, that's what I'm wondering, if that's just going to be like different fields on one database, or is it going to be, or can those in turn be turned into different?
I don't know. What do you think? Do you think those are all on one record?
Because they look like they could, I don't know.
If you're being efficient on one record.
Yeah, okay.
So it's another flat database.
Put those on it. Okay. Good. As far as it looks good for a flat database and turning it into a relational database, I could see maybe having something to do with the location of where you go. If you have a few specific places you go each year that you go to all the time, that you can keep information on that as a...
Listen,
or
what do you mean go?
Well, because she's talking about how they'll go out of town to go to different shows to buy trains, and they are disappointed when they come back and they have the same one already. So you can have, you know, a database of, you know, a flat database of the type of car and all that stuff that they already have, and then, you know, as a relational database have, you know, another table with the places they go to go buy the trains.
So you got a manufacturer or the store where they got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and because it seems like they go travel to different places, so you could have. And if they go, I don't know if it's just kind of wherever or if they have specific places that they go to all the time. That could be one I could see.
That'd be good.
So.
Okay.
And so we need probably another table. Can you think of another table that you might use?
I couldn't catch what really database that she wants to make it.
She has a collection of trains, and for each car, they want to make a record for each car as to information about that car, and that would be their flat database.
I see. So what is the field? How is the field look like? How does the field look like?
What fields is she using? Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like
manufacturer.
Type, or manufacturer, road number.
I have no idea about this.
Okay. You have no idea?
I have no idea. I'm sorry. I can't think right now what. Relational. I'm focused on that.
I see that maybe you can make some connection between not only keeping track of what they are, but who you're buying them from. And keeping a contact it's all about connections and figuring out who you're buying the best trains from. Are you getting your money's worth when you buy from this guy compared to getting, taken advantage by another person? And also, and then I could also see that if you could find out the actual worth of the train and then how much you paid it for it, you can kind of keep a running total about how much your collection is worth down the line. And then when you talked about trains, I thought about when we inserted pictures into our forms.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Take digital pictures of them and then just put them in there so that when you go to a show, if you have a notebook computer, you could pull them up, you could find all that information on it. I mean, I could just see myself walking down and say, oh, that one's really kind of cool. I wonder if I had one before. So then you get the model number, the whatever, I think the road number.
PDA,
yeah. You could punch it in, you can go back, you can look it up, and you can see it right then and there. And then you'd have a picture of it so you could really compare. So, I don't know, I'm a collector of different things too, and I mean, if you could just figure a way, a collector's database, how to make it nice, a template for someone, I mean, I think other people would use it too, so.
Great. Okay, well, those sound good. We figured out two tables for you. You're going to need three tables, at least. And so, you're going to need to find out something. So, we're looking at doing it with one table is going to be each train piece, and another table could be the manufacturer or the place where you bought it. Well, actually, you might make it so you have one table for manufacturers, one table for stores or shows where you saw it, where you bought it, and then one table for the actual piece. That could work. Okay, so that's an important thing, and I think it's important that we've learned here that when we talk about these tables, that they have to be separate, they have to be unique, and that they don't share information except for that one primary field, or foreign field as they call it. Okay? Well, thanks a lot. And now it's time for us to do a little bit of work on doing some article assessment. Which of you wants to start your presentation on your article?
I'm part one. So.
You're part one, so I guess that would start part one. Okay, I'm going to go sit in the audience. We'll set you all up here.
I'll set up your routine.
Are you going to be using a PowerPoint?
Yes.
Okay. I'll tell you what, we're going to shut you down for just a little bit while we're setting up. Start talking.
Okay. This is Rob Gingery, and I had the pleasure of going first, and I volunteered, so it's okay. And today we're going to talk about data maximizing or mining. This is over part one. And so, let me get my notes here. It is an article. And so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go over, we're supposed to break this into the summary and also talk about some discussion questions and get some group discussion going over. And I kind of embedded it all together. And so it'll be some questions and along with the summary at the same time. So, and I did send the PowerPoint to you guys through your WebCT email. So, yeah, that's fine. No, that's cool. And so feel free to use it in whatever you want to do with it. So, data maximizing your mining, part one. There are three stages of maturity to working towards stage three using decision data, data decision making as maximum capacity. And the first one was, stage one was analysis for its own sake. And stage two was analysis for improved efficiency. And so the first stage we're going to look at is that stage one. School districts know what data analysis, they know that data analysis is important and helpful, but lack skills to analyze it effectively. And so I kind of took this under my own terms and called it reaction to a problem identified by data. So by looking at data, you identify a problem. And in stage one, they're just going to basically react to the problem. So the example I give you is sixth graders are low in fractions. So the Iowa test of basic skills come back, or an assessment test come back, and they're low in fractions. So we're going to make an immediate change in curriculum or in the way we do things. And so maybe they would say that every Monday is fraction day. That would be a stage one, because they're just taking the information, analyzing it, and making a quick reaction to it. And I do this in my class. I find that science students really suffer with science literacy. I mean, they have problems reading science information, because it's different than reading for pleasure or fiction or technical reading in some of the other classes. And so, like today, my day was content reading day. And so the kids ran through an article about youth sports injuries. And they read through it, they summarized it, they reflected on it. And so that was my reaction to knowing that they were really low in science comprehension and science literacy. So what have you seen? This is my question to you. During your student teaching field experiences, during your college or high school experience, is there anything that teachers have done in the past that they've found there's a shortness here, and so they react by making some quick change to their curriculum or into their activity or lessons? I know we're kind of at a disadvantage because it's been a while since we're... Yeah, Yami.
This is the experience when I was in my country. Some schools consider data analysis is very important for them to improve their students' achievement. But unfortunately, because of the lack of facility, like the lack of understanding of using software to help them work with the data, is very limited. So as long as I see, we realize that data is very important, but to buy something like software is very difficult for those, not only in my country but in the third country, I think, in the ASEAN or in the African or some other countries, third country, I mean. Because, for example, in teaching learning process, the score of the students is manually done by the teacher, not electronically. So to collect like data, we need a lot of time to work manually. So that's why I think in the next time, how we can understand about the using software in order that we can work effectively in the classroom. So it is the problem.
And so you're kind of basing, they're kind of forced to be in stage one because of their limitations.
Yes.
Okay. And I don't think that's just third world country stuff. I mean, I feel limited in my own classroom. I mean, because I don't even have a PC in my classroom, so how am I supposed to use Access, you know, and things like that. No, I completely agree with you. And so, and especially your first year teaching, because you don't know what's out there to help you with class assessment, you know. A lot of people haven't even been exposed to like a grade book, electronic grade book, so for the first time. But no, good point. Stage one problems facing stage one teachers: understanding their limitations. You know, the text talks a little bit about, you know, data is limited in its own way. You know, it depends on how you look at the data and how you interpret. And the average of students, that's something that I always, it's really hard for me to really take to heart in middle school, is because everything is an average performance on this test, average performance on that test. And it's not really differentiated between my special ed students, my talented and gifted students, my run-of-the-mill students. And so is it one or two students really bringing the average down, or is it a large number of students? And then it also is in broad categories. There are categories, you know, science, especially in the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, they're very broad to keep it kind of a secret what they're assessing. And so one of the things that I did was, as the kids were taking their test, is I broke it down in their questions. There was 40 questions. I broke them into whether or not they were doing science content and what content it was, or was it just purely science inquiry. And so when they gave me my test results back, I could determine whether or not it was... I kind of basically make the categories a lot more focused when it came time to breaking those down. And
so you do that while the students are taking their test?
Sure do.
Because you have the test sitting in front of you.
Yep. And I put it all in Excel, and I said, question number one. And I didn't, of course, it's illegal to copy the question down. So I just basically put, question number one dealt with photosynthesis. And I put it into the, you know, life science area. And was the question more content-driven, or was it more inquiry-driven? And so when they come back with my results, I could sit down and say, you know, my kids are struggling on inquiry because they missed more on the inquiry parts, even though they were still averages. So... and no specific.
They don't provide that?
No, they will break it down according to question, but they'll say, for example, question 40 is life science or ecology, but unless I remember back to what question 40 was, I didn't know if that was dealing with food webs or life cycles or photosynthesis. It could be a whole range of things. So, and I'll, of course, I always like to go back through and see how my kids who took my curriculum did on those specific questions that dealt with the stuff that I just taught them, just so I can kind of see where I'm at. And then no specific training in data collection analysis for teachers. Until now, we don't get a whole lot of training in this area. The one phrase from the article that I liked was, they dropped it on your desk and asked you to analyze it. And that's asking a lot of for us. If someone asked me, hey, would you be interested in taking a summer class on data analysis? And I, you know, of course I'd say, well, are we going to get paid? And then also, you know, how much will it cost me? And a lot of us would do that, but we need those opportunities. And then, of course, the thing that drives me crazy is you have a changing population of students every year. And so my eighth graders move on to be ninth graders, and then I'm assessed again on how well my new eighth graders are, and they're comparing apples to oranges. They're two different groups of students. They're all eighth graders at that time, but you all know that there's a big difference between one group of students from one year to the next. My last year's group was very talented. This year, I have a lot lower functioning classes, and so will that results back coming back from IITBS really reflect on my teaching, or is it a different change of population? So,
what is the size of our students in each class you teach?
In class size, you mean the number of students?
Mm-hmm.
I teach usually between 24 and 26 students per class, and I have six sections of science, so roughly 146, 150 students. So, does that answer your question? And I'll range from all the way from severe and profound level 3 special ed up to my TAG kids, and they're all intermingled. So, and that's the way I like it too. Problems facing stage one teachers. Understand the content. Sometimes teachers and administrators focus on specific content areas instead of seeing the big picture. So they focus on one area they're doing bad, but they don't. Maybe they lose focus on maybe they're doing bad in a large area. The example I have is sixth graders, so they're low on fractions, so every day we do fraction day. But they are also behind in many other areas of math. How do we fix those problems? And if we do fix those problems, will it help fractions? So maybe you can, you know, by using, hopefully moving up to stage two, you'll be able to fix multiple problems with maybe one change of curriculum or a solution. Stage one, problem facing stage one teachers. Understand the implications for further data collection.
And once you collect data and make changes, this creates new situations to collect data. It seems like it's a kind of an exponential thing. Once you collect data, then you can collect more data on that data and collect more data on that data. And so, and a lot of you on WebCT talked about that. Andrew, I know you kind of mentioned a little bit of that, how it kind of builds on it. So, that's about all I got for that one. And, you know, of course, as you collect more data and talk about it, it just seems like we're collecting data and data, and it gets very frustrating after a while because it just seems like that becomes the focus instead of actual teaching in our lessons and dealing with students. Now, I didn't want to stay on the negative, and the article didn't talk about positive things, but these are some of the things that I think that are positive about being in stage one. Teachers and administrators are trying to improve student achievement. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, we've all gone through teachers where they kind of just sit back, and whether you fail or you achieve, it really doesn't matter to them personally. And so at least they're trying. Breaks away from tradition and moves away from assumptions. We assume that our students are learning because they got an A on the test. Well, maybe they're just good at memorizing. Maybe they just chunk it all in their brain for a couple days and then forget it. If students struggle, then we need to study harder. That's the assumption I have. If a kid's getting an F in my class, he's just not studying hard enough. Well, maybe that's not the point, and maybe Dad will support that. And then recognize that changes need, and then they also explore their options. Because until you get that data and you take a look at it, sometimes everything's fine in your district or in your building, and we just don't recognize that there's problems there. You guys think of any other benefits that might be from being in stage one?
Can you be back to the previous one? But the benefit for the future, I think. Can you move back, please? I don't know whether this problem happened in everywhere or not. Like in my hometown, it's difficult for us to recall 10 years data, previous data.
Now, are you answering the question that he asked, which is what are the benefits of this?
I would like to connect with the benefit of this.
Okay.
Formerly we did manually, I continue about the term of manually, we printed out the score of the students and we put in one book, for example, for this year, and the next year we did the same things, and then if there are no room or there is no space to put the scores, we threw them out. And then it's difficult for us to recall like 5 years or 10 years before. So it is the benefit of this data, I think, electronically. I think it's easy to recall about 10 years or 20 years in the past, I think. So when we want to design or to make the data in the next time, we can learn about the previous one and we can compare for the next time. It is the benefit, I think.
I got a benefit.
Sure.
Seems to me that one of the keys is that if you're out there measuring data, that it means you're paying attention to what's happening. Yeah, I mean, hopefully. But I mean, if you're out there measuring data and that's important to you, and you're in stage one and you're in the preliminary aspects of collecting the data, you're thinking about the process. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real important beginning. And, you know, obviously it depends on what you do with that data and where you go with it, but I think that's a great move towards working for a better situation.
Yeah, because you know, if you know you have to collect some type of data on a lesson that you're going to do, you're going to have to maybe give them a pretest so you know what the data is valid at the end. And so it just helps them start. No, I completely agree. Stage two, analyzing for improvement efficiency. Identifying needs, changes, and making a data-driven decision to improve curriculum, student teaching techniques, or personnel. And I actually had the privilege to work in a school district in down in Kansas City in Independence that I think, in my eyes, was in stage two. And after getting information back from the state assessment test, we identified students who were on the bubble. We even called them bubble students, and that's how they referred to them in the article. And what we did is we took those students and we met with them individually once a week during their study hall time and worked on skills that we know that they were deficient in. It was great to work with those kids, and it did improve achievement. But then as we did that, I also thought back, well, what about everybody else? Just because they're not in between proficiency levels on the bubble, they need to be worked with also. What did we do right? What did we do wrong? I think that's what we did. We focused on just a few kids. Of about 180 eighth graders, we only focused on 25, which helped us get our improvement goal higher. But again, that totally left out a large section of kids. So that's a little bit my own experience when it comes to stage two. Role of formative assessment and standards and assessments. Stage two, now the schools are going to try to implement some type of more formal assessment. Instead of giving letting a teacher create their own assessment or using a traditional standard book assessment, now they're trying to make assessments that tie directly to the standard. And as a teacher that's not been out there very long, only 8 years, I didn't know really any other way. When I sit down to write a test or a quiz or write a lesson, the first thing I look at is the standard, because that will dictate where you go from there. And then also when I taught out in Colorado, all of our tests were directly aligned with the National Science Standards. And so not only did I give them a score on their test of, 15 out of 20, I also went through and told them that they got 4 out of 5 on those different standards. So I actually had two running grades in my grade book. So grades do not always reflect a student's true ability. And so you wanted to have some type of assessment that tries to get their actual ability, not just whether or not they turn in their homework on time and do other things that are more, I call them citizenship things, responsibility things. And with these formative assessments, you get an actual better idea if the student really knows their content or if they're just a good all-around student. As a teacher, you find yourself teaching to the ability of your class, not towards the student, not towards the standard. And so if I have a class that's low and I have this formative assessment kind of driving my lessons, then more than likely I'm going to be teaching at a standard level instead of teaching at a level of my classroom. And that's what I find is when I get a classroom with a lot of level 1, 2, and 3 special ed students, it seems like I kind of slow that class down and lower the achievement level when I might have some tag kid sitting in the back of the room who says, hey, I'm ready for something else. Then they talked about the glass ceiling. What happens when you maximize a specific group of students? What happens when all your bubble kids are doing as good as they possibly can? And that's what we faced in Independence when we did this. The first year when we focused on bubble kids, we improved. The second year we improved a little bit more. And then the third year we improved very little because we've maximized those kids now. We've really tried to improve the best we can. And then sometimes we never really dealt with that problem. And middle school students move to high school, and then we don't monitor their progress after that. Once they leave our room and move to high school, it seems like their data collection for me is over with, and it's not passed on. So, benefits of stage two. Individual students are identified. Not all, but some students will be getting help. And so, like I said, those 20 of 170 kids we actually focused on. Gains are made throughout a district to help students' achievement. I mean, it really does improve. And as you'll see, if you take a look at the additional sites that I put up there, especially the third one, it'll actually show you that they made improvements really quickly, but then those kind of peaked off and they kind of stayed the same. Teachers and administrators become more skilled in assessment and standard-based education. And that's something that they keep telling us, use it, get used to doing it, and you'll become better at it and you'll like it more. And students see that teachers are watching their performance. Instead of just getting a grade, now they know that we're watching everything, not only whether or not they get their homework turned in, but are they really learning? Because students can sometimes really pretend well that they're actually learning when they're kind of just memorizing things and getting by. The three websites I put up with additional information, one is from Washington Elementary School in Sherman, Texas, and it's from an Edison school, and the author of the article is an Edison an administrator, I believe. And it shows you their progress throughout the year. And the reason I picked that one is because it showed
that in some situations this doesn't always work. The next one talks a little bit about the mission statement of Edison schools and how level 1, level 2, and level 3 are used. And the third one actually shows an elementary school in California that actually improved on it. It showed some mass improvements using this type of assessment and keeping track of students' progress. So, anything else? Questions?
Are you going to show this one?
Oh, sure, I can. I guess I...
Since that's what you're supposed to do, I...
I guess so. And so when you look at this right here, and the part that I looked at was student achievement. And it's kind of interesting when you're a public school teacher and you look at other school districts, how they make their accountability shown and how they show it to the public. It's just neat how they have all their ducks in a row. And it's kind of neat to see how in-depth their information and how much data they've collected on their students. And if you haven't ever looked at one of these, it's pretty interesting. At least to me it is. It shows all the different demographics, the ethnic groups of students. And if I can scroll down to the one part that kind of supports my idea about that glass ceiling. I remember what page it's on here. It's kind of lengthy too. Yeah, right about it. Look right there. It talks a little bit about African American students, and you can tell they kind of focused on them because actual growth, it moved from 27% up to 70% in the next year. So they've identified their bubble kids. At least this is how I interpret this. And then all of a sudden, now they're maximizing their bubble kids, and now their improvement's only raised by 14%. Do you guys think I'm interpreting that right? I mean, we can take a look at their growth.
Those are percentages?
Yeah. And so you can take a look at this. The initial from 2001 to 2002 to the next year, I mean, look at their actual growth there, 27% up to 70%. But then in the next year, it's 14%. Then you look down below, 16 to 87% down to 6%. So if I looked at this and you look at the article that we read, I think that this would be a stage 2 school because of their maximizing their certain population. And it also shows that, you know, you can make dramatic growths from one year to the next, even if you're working with some different, you know, ethnic groups. You know, they always say free and reduced lunch kids and things like that. And here's some data that supports that you can do some dramatic things with them. The other website is the Edison School, and I have a little experience with that because when I taught in Kansas City, the Kansas City Public School District was in a place where their accreditation was revoked, and Edison Schools came in and took over a lot of them and made them into charter schools. And I haven't kept track of a lot of them down there, whether or not they've been good or bad for that school district, but we did have a lot of influx of their students come to our school district because they, you know, it was a big change for them. So it was such a big change for them. They didn't know what to expect. It was kind of a scary deal. And I don't know. And some of the teachers even wanted to come to our school district because they didn't want to be having someone look over their shoulder all the time. So, and it's got their mission statement and overview, and it talks a little bit about their philosophy at Edison Schools. So, and the other one is a PDF file.
Now, how does that one... fit in with the article?
The author of the article is one of the administrators of Edison Schools.
There you go. Okay.
So, and in a side note, he's in Great Britain doing this now. So I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't know. You can interpret that different ways. The other one that was on there was the performance from an Edison School in Sherman, Texas. And I looked at it because I'm not here to promote politics or nothing, but I don't always agree with everything that No Child Left Behind deals with. And for some reason, it won't come up. Okay. Well, maybe it will. But this was a Sherman, Texas, and so this is back in 95, and so this was right in the heart of Governor Bush's
No Child Left Behind development with the TAS, T-A-A-S, assessment test they take in Texas. And if I can just scroll to the very back of it, it shows all the different growth of students through different areas. And then it has an assumption at the very back. And it basically, in summary, it basically says that in certain situations, the Edison's first annual report on student performance was noted that state's criteria reference tests, and so on and so on. There was a single best year for the schools during the 5 years and had been operating and by Edison. And it goes on and basically says that their improvement declined really quickly. And so it worked right at the initial part of it, but then it declined so quickly that in some of the schools that I read about, they've actually gone back to more traditional ways. So positive and negative, we'll say. Questions?
Good job.
Thank you. Want to hit stop?
One thing I might point out is one of the things I was also looking for when you're leading a discussion is that you say, you know, the point that Yami made, you know, there's only four of us, so that's not going to. It's a little tough. But
yeah.
It's good, you know, really get interactive on the discussion side.
Okay.
Good. Why don't we take a break? Okay. Turn that off.
I did now, though.
Now, sir. Huh?
I don't think that was on anymore. I didn't turn it off.
I think I turned it off for the break. I hope it was. Otherwise, we didn't get much. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
And
so.
When you look on the record button, talk a little bit. Is it coming up?
On the record button.
On the screen.
I don't know what it's supposed to come up. Oh, yes, I see it now.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. All right. I have Maximizing Your Mining Part 2, second part to Rob's article. And like I said, this is continuation from Part 1. There we were introduced to the three stages that, two, basically, that the stages go through when dealing with data analysis. And in this article, we expanded on those ideas and took a look at the differences between each stage and also looked at the third stage that we have. We also looked at how schools must go beyond just the standards of the No Child Left Behind and focus and delegate and how delegation takes tasks for schools go and move into operate as a stage three school and how they can do that. Okay, we also looked at how schools, we look at some of the challenges that come from transforming into a stage three school, as well as the different, there's a list in the back of, at the end of the article that had a list of different analysis, data analysis tools for teachers and administrators to use as well. So, to recap, we just talked about the first two stages, and we're going to be talking about the third. So what are the total of the three stages since we've read both articles, and Rob just talked about the first two. Can you guys tell me up there? Stage one is?
Analysis for analysis' sake.
Good. Stage two is? Anybody? Yami, do you remember what stage two is? He put you on the spot.
Analysis for improvement.
Good job. And from this second article here, what is stage three? Rob? You're next, just wait.
Focusing on the individual.
Yep, and to move into more like of a sustained achievement and going on. Mm-hmm. Not just reaching that goal like you just talked about. So there we have. And it's not for students to, or for the school, is required to adapt more of a core belief that all their students can achieve at a higher level. And it does more than to push just the marginal students, like you were talking about, over the No Child Left Behind standards. And not only are they supposed to, they need to adapt the new core beliefs, but also must be willing to radically reconstruct their time and their terms based on frequent data collection. So, some of the strategies that were used by some of the stage three schools were that it focuses on individuals, like Robbie just said. It's more personalized learning. And they look at added value. Does anybody remember what added value is from the article? Dr. Dice.
added value has to do with things. What you're doing is improving the situation, but it's doing it beyond the amount of effort that you put into it. Gives you that added value.
Mm-hmm. Very good. You guys are good. Okay, and the fourth one is the systems of accountability, and using that among teachers. In the article, it talks about different challenges that came up from using those strategies. Such as providing individualized instruction for dozens or hundreds of students at one time poses a big problem for teachers. Also having the time to do additional assessments on top of assessments, on top of doing regular schoolwork and being focused on their kids. And then in turn taking that and developing the action plans that go with it, and then actually implementing the changes. So in the article, they had different suggestions for the challenges that they talked about. One was using all available resources, such as they talked about how if you have teachers who are qualified to teach reading, that they set up reading programs for students. So all qualified employees are being used to their best ability, as well as providing peer tutoring. Integrated technology systems. For student info systems, which is a lot of what we're doing in this class here, to make things more efficient and easy. Formative assessment systems and student performance tracking tools, all the things that we have been talking about. And also having students take ownership and getting students involved more, training students to track their own performance and give them opportunities to practice setting goals and creating action plans to guide their own learning. My question is for this here, with the students taking ownership, I think it's key and important, but as a teacher, how do you guys see that as being something that would be beneficial or something that would just take more time to try and, like it says, to train your students? Because they have to know what they're looking at. You know, you can't just, I mean, even with teachers, you can't just plop something in front of them and say, okay, analyze it and tell me what you get out of it. You know, you kind of have to help them. You have to train them. And if you're going to have to take more time to train your students, how well will that work? So, what do you guys think of that? Is it going to be something that is beneficial in the long run, or is it going to be almost a waste of time? Or, what are some ways that you can think of that to maybe make it more efficient? So I'll open it up to you guys.
Start them early. Start them like in kindergarten. Maybe it takes 12 years to get to the process of this ownership, but start them in their kindergarten.
Start them early and training them, and good. Yami, what were you going to say?
I'm thinking there are many benefits, but in another side, the teacher will be very busy.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, this is very true.
You have to spend a lot of time to take off.
Do you think, I don't know, off the top of your head, can you think of any ways that could possibly help make it more efficient, or no? I mean, it could be that it just isn't, you know, like, but could there possibly be a way to make it more efficient? Like Rob said, starting kids early, looking at things when they're, like, in kindergarten, just little by little adding on each year to make it, when they get older, that they can do it, and it does not take so much time.
One of the effective ways, I think, working collaboratively with the parents.
Collaboratively with parents. You mentioned that in the online discussion. That was a very good point.
The involvement of the parents is very important, I think, to know how far the students understand about the instructional materials and what is the task of the parents and what is the task of the teacher.
So would you have, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, would you have, say, different things that you'd send home to the parents and they would in turn help their students at home understand what they're looking at? Is that what you're saying? Or can you clarify that a little bit more for me?
I'm thinking at home it is the responsibility of the parents,
Mm-hmm. And a school is the responsibility of the teacher, but they have to work together.
Mm-hmm.
So if the students do not know something at home, the teacher should say to the parents should say to the teacher, my kids doesn't know about this. Can you
help
teach him about this, for example?
Okay, good.
Can I add on that?
Yep.
I think that's just a huge transformation from tradition, because you know, I think parents are, what grade did my kid get? And they really, in my experience, don't really care about whether or not they're really learning at certain points. They just want to know whether or not they got the A or the B or the C. And so I think it would just be great to do this, but it's just going to be a huge transformation. It would be almost taking a school and making it a completely different environment, completely turning it upside down.
But isn't that what this is all about?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Changing the culture?
Yeah. Good.
And it just takes one group of people that work really well together and just do it, you know?
Good. Do you guys have anything to add on, Andy?
I have nothing to add.
Okay, Dr. Zeitz?
Boy, I bet you'll never hear that again.
I think that's twice tonight that we've heard from nothing.
That's a tough thing to get your arms around, even conceptually, let alone beginning to identify some prescriptions that can be developed from it.
Do you think it's possible?
For student ownership, I would, as I'm a fairly optimistic guy, I would say yes. But my question that I'm always stuck with is, why don't they have ownership already?
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing to take the ownership away from them?
I think that's
a fair question, and that I think it needs to be, why don't they have ownership already? What has occurred? Are we doing things to take ownership away from them, or are we not giving them the opportunities to experience the ownership? I think that's a fair question. Why don't they already have it?
That is good.
I think the traditionalism of school takes away from them. You know, talking to a teacher, what do you have lunch? Oh, I have lunch from 12:27 to 12:52. Everything is so structured and laid out for them that we take it away from them slowly, piece by piece. I'd love to be able to just have the kids come in and work at their own pace and do their own thing for me for the 90 minutes I have them. So
I think that's the way we do it.
Do you find that, I don't know what it's like, I haven't really been in a classroom before and haven't been teaching a lot, but there's always been the big difference between teacher-centered curriculum and then the student-centered. Do you find that teachers are more of the teacher-centered? They just like to have it all planned out, and they would go in there and they teach it, and then that's kind of how it is. And because that leaves no room, if that's more of a traditional setting, that leaves no room for the students to be able to interact and do things on their own and kind of get that in a way. I mean, I know it kind
of... I mean, there's all types of teaching style.
Mm-hmm.
I view myself more closely aligned to a student or an ownership. You know, they're very student-based. It's, you know, I might be making an assignment where you have to show me proof, or the one that they did just a couple weeks ago, or last week, was they had to come up with some way to teach a third grader about the structures of the bone. And I didn't tell them they had to make a paper or a game or a model, they just came up with those. But then on the other hand, there's other teachers I know, and even me at the beginning of my teaching career, that's how I did it. Because
mm-hmm.
that the idea of not having control in your classroom, not just behavior control, but
yeah,
what they're studying is hard,
mm-hmm.
very hard to give up.
Yeah. I think when we talk about, I mean, like over at Price Laboratory School in the middle school, they have a student-run teacher conference. The student sits down and identifies, you know, they've got a portfolio that they've put together, and they talk with the parents, and the parents are there, and they talk with them, and they show them the things that worked and the things that didn't work and where they need to improve, and I think there is some, you know, some ownership there.
See, I went through that for every year that I was in school. We had student-led conferences.
Mm-hmm.
So
did you have a feeling of ownership?
No.
Why?
It just seemed like another thing that we had do as kids.
Another assignment, kind of
a thing. It, but with me, it was like, I'm going to get beaten when I get home.
We've got a superintendent for a father and a principal for a mother.
Yeah, I would just, no matter what. maybe it's the...
That's good.
Because it's the kids that aren't taking the responsibility in their ownership. And it sounds like a harsh thing to say that we should have responsible students and that they should be responsible. The student, the teacher can't do everything, but right now where I'm at, I see that the only thing where I can see a clear-cut position there, it's the student's responsibility. If you don't want to do it, you know, I got 21 other kids.
Good.
It's not hard.
I know it does.
You know, you're almost drawn to because it's such a big idea, student ownership.
When mm-hmm. I taught in the prison, what I did, I was at the Malibu, I was at a probation camp in Malibu, and I individualized the math program for everybody. I had 17 kids in this class, all of them from different gangs. They'd kill each other in the outs, but the thing was that when we were in there, what they had to do is I individualized it because I had students all the way from those who didn't know their addition tables to those who were in trigonometry. And so it was the only way I could run a good math program. And at the beginning, and actually it was set up so that they had, you know, pages and things like that that I'd individualize. And what I would do is at the beginning of each class, I'd sit down and I'd say, okay, what's your target for today? How many pages are you going to get done? You know, and then you correct them and that sort of thing. And it was interesting because by encouraging them or requiring them to get involved in what they were doing, as we were talking about at the break, to get them involved in what they were doing, to get them so that they have to take responsibility for their own learning, it really made a difference in the way in which they approached their work.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. And I think, I don't remember who it was, either Kathleen or Sandra, talked about also that she stressed that it was a key point to have students take that ownership in their learning and stuff. So it's kind of a hard thing. So another question, I have lots of questions tonight, is to try and relate this back to the first article we read from that Dr. Zeitz did last week about the longitudinal and the multidimensional perspective. If you guys remember how Annie's got this face. Do you guys remember what those ones are about? And what were kind of the first question that Dr. Zeitz asked was about just the different perspectives and how that would work.
So the question is, how does this article relate to the ideas that we discussed last week?
Yes.
Okay.
That is the question. New types of assessment and tie it all together.
So that we can take this level 3 assessments and stuff and connect them together to make students achieve more.
Good. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember what specifically each, like, what was the longitudinal? Like, what was that? What did we... Dr. Zeitz, yes.
I know.
What is it?
Longitudinal has to do with looking at change over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're taking a look to see what happens over a period of time and see what kinds of interventions are making differences.
Yep. And how, from this article that we read today, what are some of the examples that they talked about of how they did that? In stage 3, it was about the continuation, right? It wasn't just going to the standards, and as soon as you get those certain kids over the standards, that's enough. But it was about continuing it on and keeping it constant, not just this big, what Rob talked about in his part was just this big influx and like a great, you know, we improved a lot, but then we just dropped off, you know, like, but just keeping it continuing going. So that's one way. What was the other perspective? Multidimensional. Yummy? Yummy? You remember what that is? We talked about last week. You have to remember a lot.
Yeah. I think talking about the demographic aspect, for example,
mm-hmm.
It can be cultural setting. So the relationship between the previous materials and this article, I think, is about the culture.
Culture. Talked a lot about... Sorry, were you... Keep going. No, I don't want to interrupt you.
I mean that, like... what Dr. Zed said just now about the teacher conference, for example,
mm-hmm.
is including the culture. So how the teacher get the information from the parents about the kids itself, and then what should the kid want to the teacher to learn, and what have the students learn from the teacher. So it is kind of the culture and the relation with this culture and this article.
Mm-hmm. I think, and to elaborate more on the culture, we talked about the individual student themselves and who they are as an individual and where they come from, just the demographic, the background of each student, right? Is
yes.
that what you're kind of...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, just to go back and look at... Sorry, guys. The strategies. Here are the four strategies that they listed. And just to kind of... I kind of pulled out some of your guys' answers from the discussion from Dr. Zeitz's thing and what we discussed for his question. And Andy, you had said, and we'll kind of see, you can see how it relates here, is how Andy, you had said that the multidimensional aspect was made possible to, made the ability to identify specific groups of individuals and identify the trends that may be unique to a particular group. So therefore, we have the personalized learning and the focusing more on the individuals, right? So that's one. Good job. Way to make that connection. You also said, I have a lot of quotes from you. You had a lot of good quotes last time. But yes, that the longitudinal aspect allows the students or the teachers from various grades to communicate about student performance. So therefore, it goes into the collaboration part and the systems of accountability between students and administrators.
You did
very good. Kathleen talked about again the identification of the subgroups and the collaboration among colleagues. Yami, you had said that you, in the discussing about longitudinal and multidimensional perspectives, to see the progress of students in a district involves a deeper analysis of comprehension. Kind of ties into that as well. And again, just the big on the individual student. Robbie talked about that as well. So, also, just one more thing to kind of go with that. With the systems of accountability, Rob, you had mentioned that you were doing in Colorado different accountability groups with teachers out there. And they had an example from the article that we read from the Anna T. Shaw Middle School in Philadelphia. How he said that they conducted, I don't know if you remember this at all, but the ABCs, the administrative benchmark conferences, where they met each month at this middle school, the principal did with all the teachers, and they discussed the present analysis of the data that they had, or the assessment of the data, and then they kind of summarized their findings, and then they, you know, had a plan of an attack, you know, of what they were going to do. So that also just kind of goes in with that. So... Sorry. To go on to the second question I have, which is, what are some ways that we can use this information, it kind of might be kind of redundant, that we read in this article to help assess your students as a teacher? How can we actually use this information in that we read about? Andy, you look confused.
I like the formative assessment parts.
Formative assessment parts.
So that...
Why?
Just because, you know, if I make a test for my quiz over my own teaching, it just reflects what my kids learn from me, not what they learned overall. So when I give them a formative assessment test, or a test that's very well-rounded and it can be viewed from different, you know, aspects of the district, then I know whether or not just my teaching is sufficient or good, or is it everybody's. It just compares people together.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about when I taught in Colorado is that I was one of 8 eighth grade teachers and we gave the same test. And so it was cool because I could compare my teaching to other teachers. And so if Diane down the hallway seemed to be doing really well in the physics part of our unit, I can go and say, hey, what are you doing in there? Why isn't my kids aren't doing as well? So I like that.
Okay. So the information as to how everybody else was doing on this test was made public to you?
Yeah, and public to parents.
Really?
And, you know, at first I didn't like that. I didn't think that was neat at all. But then you found out it was all about just making your classroom better. I'm open enough that I don't have a problem with it. But it was pretty interesting, actually. Because then you know, if you taught standards-based lessons, you all got to the end anyway. You all were ready for the test anyway. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, so it doesn't matter if teaching it, the way that you taught it was standing in the corner and whistling Dixie.
Yeah.
If it worked, and they learned it, then it was successful. So you had academic freedom. So you could teach how you wanted as long as they were able to pass the test. Now, the question is that a teaching to the test?
I don't think so. It depends on what kind of teacher you were. If you were just up there just saying, okay, guys, we're going to memorize the bones of the body because they're on the test, and here we go, boom, 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 boom. But on the other hand, if I'm having to make playing a game on the computer where they have to put the bones in, and then after they get back, they have to make a model of the skeletal system. We're still getting to the end, but I didn't teach to the test, I don't think, in my opinion.
Well, teaching to the objectives that are on the test.
Exactly.
Okay.
Good. Anybody else? Anything you guys want to add? Questions? Anything?
I'd like the idea of systems of accountability.
System of accountability.
Because as a teacher, they have to analyze both the student's performance, the data of the student's performance, and they learn and they can compare with the other data, and they can put together and use that for the other kind of teaching learning process.
Good.
So we can use the collected data for the information.
Very good. Good point. Okay. Now for my additional resource. I found this website. There it is. The AEA. I don't know if it'll work. Wasn't working out there. So.
You know, we should have an online database where we keep track of all these additional resources.
Hey. How do you... Okay, the Heartland.
Ooh,
I backed up. I knew it. I just kind of went and did a general search, and this is one of the first ones that came up, and I really enjoyed looking at it because they had so much extra information on data analysis and data-driven instruction, and how, as you can see in the first, it just says, you know, like why the website was created, to explore just different various electronic information sources. And these are just the different things that you can look at, you know, just the different websites and school improvement websites. So you can go in, just different journals on things so you can kind of compare how other schools are doing, as well as the library materials and using Erickson different digests and stuff. So there's just several different websites within each section here, which is really great, and I just thought it was just a big abundance.
What is Data and Stiggins?
Yeah.
We can look that up, but I don't know what Stiggins is.
Stiggins is the assessment guy at the University of Oregon. Huge assessment guy.
Somebody else. You mean the guy that does the work with the
Stiggins model, the guy that does the DVDs and all the...
The guy that does the directed learning. Okay, well...
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Also, that's okay. you can just go, they have just all these different little buttons here. And I went into what's new, and it took me here. And then I just scrolled down to the Iowa Teachers Quality Legislation information and clicked on the website that they gave here, which took you here. And it's just those different ways that you can just upload your system as a teacher. And I just thought it was great that you had that there, and how to make sure that you are, that it would be, that you have everything set up to evaluate, to move into that.
What if you upload your system?
Well, like, you can come here, and then it just shows like different, like you have the teaching standards and all this here, and then there's a somewhere in here.
So that's one of their tools that they
Yeah. Yeah, so you can come and like basically put, you know, your, make sure, I don't know.
Do you know if you have?
Yeah. But then also, like, I went into, where'd I go? There's something I went into. I can't remember what I did.
You could write down the
Yeah.
Getting started, here it was. And then there's this decision flow chart to see when you first decide, you know, whether or not, you know, if you're able to do it or not.
Can you go back to the top?
Yeah.
Right there. It says, does your district evaluation system meet the requirements for remote teacher growth?
That, this is the teacher development model.
Yeah.
That's
great. Yeah.
So, and there's just different. So, I thought it was really cool. So, yeah, that's it.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
That's what
I'm. Very nice job, both of you. I'd like to applaud to both of you. I want to point out, really great to have the way that you were really bringing in all the discussion that was happening online. You know, and that's, and you did a little bit, but I mean, you want to make sure you bring that in. What do you think about this process? I must admit, this is the first time I've ever used this process of doing it online and then coming to class and doing all. You've probably done it. I know you've done it in other classes. What do you think? Okay.
It's really hard to decide what your intentions are. But other than that, I think it's great because then you can. I've been doing it during the passing time in my classes. And the kids will be coming in and out, and I'll hop on and see if there's any messages. So, super.
So you were having an opportunity of. You were doing it during passing time, so you had a little bit of time to get on there. But you must have been motivated if during the day you come in and you want to take a look at what other people are saying.
Yeah.
And I know you replied to mine pretty quickly. That's just what I thought, Dr. Z. Don't worry about it. Okay, and next week it's going to be you two.
Yeah, we learned a lot.
Yeah. Just from doing the process, yeah. That's why the grading gets tougher as time. No. Okay, so there you go. But yeah, so you'll be doing it next week, and you'll have those two assignments, or those two articles that you'll be doing. Good? The discussion posted. What do you mean?
You know how with the other one it says 1, 2, 3.
Oh, that's right. I'll be doing that tonight. Okay? I'll put that up so you guys can do that. In other words, actually, I thought that they were already up there, but maybe they're not. In other words, the discussion room. We need to have.
Yeah,
we can do that. Okay, I'll get those up. Now, deadlines again for doing that are that we want to get, like you to post your questions tomorrow. Remember, that was what I sent out on the email.
Going to do it today, but the
okay, well.
I just want to add that in front of everybody.
Yeah,
that
you're all set to do it. Okay.
No.
Okay, Mr. Crumb. Yeah, right. You better watch it. Okay, so we expect you to post your questions tomorrow. And then the first replies will be Monday or Sunday? Monday? Monday. And then the final replies will be on Wednesday. Now, I think this gave everybody enough time to read, right?
Yeah, but just don't forget when you're making your questions to reply to the other person's question.
That's what I. That
that's
was
what
hard.
I did. I got
for
a little
you,
concerned about my questions and
yeah,
all.
Yeah, and like replying to those people.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go take a look, because I think there were some process things we need to look at. And so we're going on to WebCT. Then I'll go on to my account here. And if you want to go out and take a look in the discussion, oh, somebody sent me an email. How do you like that?
Yeah, that's my PowerPoint.
Okay, that's your PowerPoint. Okay. And let's see, if I go to the discussions, here we're in the discussions, and I just have one maximizing. Okay, if we take a look at these, let's take a look here, and I'll look at all. And like if we take a look at this strand here, this is Sandra's response. And then if you get down to the bottom, you can act, were you using these buttons down here at the bottom? Okay, if you do this, and take a look at this one is Sandra's response right here. So the next one's going to be Rob. If I use this right envelope, it takes me to Rob's. What it does is you can travel right down the strand, right down the thread. Isn't that cool?
That is extremely cool.
I just discovered that a couple days ago.
What are those posts?
Well, I don't know. Let's take a look.
Yeah. Hit it?
Hit it. Okay, that's number 61. We do post again. I think what the post is it goes to the main posting.
The extremes?
I think it goes to the primary posting.
Well, then what does that right one do?
I don't know. So if we click on this one, and we bring that one back up.
Thank you, right?
No. Okay, there's number 59. And down here at the bottom, we'll click on that. No, that's it. Okay, so if you click on the thumbtacks, it will take you to the primary posting. And actually, like on this group, you're only going to have probably two of those. Now go one, question one and question two, or however you do that. And if you go with just the envelopes, that will take you right down the list. Also, if we click on, say, this one right here, I don't remember how I did it, but there was a way. Oh, I know what I did. If you click on that, there you go. At the very beginning on the question, see up here on the question? If you click on the magnifying glass, what it will do is it will give you the complete strand. You see? And so you can go down and you can look at each of them. And with each one, what you can do is you can reply. And here's Rob's, and I'll just say, yes, I agree. And now if I click on post, then it brings me, let's see, I guess I have to go back up and click on that again if I want to go through those. Okay? So that's, there we go. Another point is that you have some different options here. One option is to quote it. One is to reply. If you're just replying, and people are going to be looking at it in a thread like this, then you probably don't have to hit quote. So in this case, we won't want to use quote because we'll learn about how to use it as a thread. If you're getting email, by the way, through this system, and somebody sends you a note and then you reply to it, please use quote. In other words, if we go back and we're using email, because I just got an email the other day from, I think it was one of you, and it just said, sure, no problem. And I have no idea, you know, I had to go dig around to try to find out what that was about. Now, if you had actually, let's see, here's the email, and let's say I've got an inbox here, here's unread, here's PowerPoint 1, Now, if I want to reply to him, if I hit reply and I just say thanks, and he doesn't know what it's from, you know, it'll be a problem, right? If I hit quote, you notice what that lets me do is I just go thanks, and he looks down there and he sees, oh yeah, Dr. Z is giving me feedback about this presentation. Good, okay? So that's just a little piece of trivia on using this, okay? Okay, now, a couple questions. Number one. And that is that. Oops, I dropped it again.
Yeah.
Caught that one, yeah. Okay, number one, I would like to try to set up a field trip down to Cedar Rapids. Now, where are you teaching?
Charles City.
That's a long ways away. Well, from Cedar Rapids, it's a long ways away. Yeah, okay. What I was thinking was setting up a field trip to go down to what's Prairie District? There's
Cedar Rapids Prairie.
Yeah, there's one school there that is just the epitome of using data and technology. Now, I must admit, I've never been there. But what I was thinking was setting up a time in the afternoon. Now you teach every day, huh? Oh, you live here in town. Okay. Do you have any days off coming up that the Cedar Rapids wouldn't have? Okay. And you get off at what time?
I cruise back to Cedar Falls by
4:20. Okay. Let me contact him down there and see, because then it's another hour to get down there. That'd be five. Pardon?
I can get half a person.
Well, that's up to you if you want to do that. Well, okay. If you could get a personal day or something like that, I didn't want to impose on your personal days. But if you could get a personal day, I think this would be a wonderful opportunity. Now, what do your days look like, Kelly?
let's see. Basically, I'm free like Tuesdays after noon.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wednesdays after.
Okay. What about yours, Andy?
Are you,
Tuesday afternoons look good?
I could probably have to do Monday.
Monday too? Okay. Tuesday's not going to work on. What about Monday?
Monday I have class from 12 to 3, then consulting hours.
12 to 3. What about you, Yummy? What days do you. You're pretty much evenings, right?
I have available time in the morning for North.
Okay. Do you have any time in the morning?
Every
not morning. Tuesday, but you don't have any time in the morning?
No.
Okay.
Wednesday afternoon is okay.
Wednesday afternoon?
Yes.
I've got Ed Media Wednesday. That's not going to work, unfortunately. What about Thursday? Now you've got class.
Well, I have class travel noon.
Yeah, I know you have this class. You. Huh? Is open? Are you open on Thursday?
Open, yeah, in the morning till 4. So I'm my Thursday morning. So
what about Thursday?
What time?
That's sometime during the day.
In the morning I have time. Afternoon I have class to do everything at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, that's this one.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I know about that one. Okay. Would you be available on a Thursday if you could take a day off or afternoon? Okay. Well, the real key is that what we want to do is we want to go down there and also eat at the Taj Mahal while we're down there. I mean, we might as well get some, you know, some ethnic food. Well, huh? Yeah, get some Indian food. I mean, that'd just be a lot of fun. And lunches are buffets, so that's good. But the idea is if we could go down there, we could see, you know, what they have. I'll call them up and find out about what it is, and we'll set up a time. And I'll get a couple different times. But Thursdays are okay? Shall I try for Thursday?
Thursday in the morning.
Thursday? I thought you said Thursday. Thursday. Okay. Okay. And yours would be when you might have an opportunity to take off a day. Okay. And let me find out, let me get some more information for you. I just wanted to see if you guys were amenable to doing that, because I think it's a real valuable thing to see it in action. Okay? That sounds good. Okay, do you have the assignment? Oh, actually. Okay. Any questions or realizations or anything like that from this assignment?
one actually kind of made more sense than the previous two.
What do you mean?
Not just because I've used it more. It just seemed like everything just kind of made more sense. The vocabulary, the language they used.
Things were falling in.
Yeah, and it finally let you see that, wow, if we get done with this, people can enter information, it'll be really easy.
I must admit, I had some problems finding the things they said I was going to find. Did any of you have problems finding, like, the buttons and stuff like that?
Yeah, a little bit. They don't differentiate between the very top toolbar and the side toolbox very well.
Mm-hmm. What, somebody stole your pen?
That's mine.
They were here.
She's stealing your pen.
He's down here last.
No, no, I had you, his pen.
I have a pencil. This is it.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Okay, and so now you all feel like you can do something like create a form? You know, I was going to go through this. Is this at all beneficial for me to go through like this and kind of talk about your next assignment? Nah, okay. I was kind of wondering about that. Tell you what I'm interested in doing, though. And actually, I don't know we have a whole lot of time. We've only got, 10 minutes. But one of the things you've gone through, and you've gone through the process of modifying a database. You've gone through the process of adding fields. And you've gone through the process of developing a form. Now, I'll tell you what. Let's take a look at, let's say that we wanted to create a database. What I was hoping is we might spend a time and I was going to team you up. And I was going to, you know, however you want to break it up, but I was going to team you up in teams of two and have you start creating a database from scratch. Now, the process of creating a database, as you saw, really isn't that tough now with the wizard and all that sort of thing, right? But let's take a look at a database that we'd want to create. I'm going to go over here and open up Word. And under Word, let me make it a little bit bigger. Okay. And just a flat database. What I wanted to do is, let's say that I'm running a dog show. And in this dog show, I need to create a database that we can use so we can manage the dogs. Okay? And who the entries are. So what I want to do is go with, I want you to think about, let's come up with 8 fields that we would put in there. And when you think of the field, I'm just going to go right down. I picked 8 because there's 4 of you. And we'll go through it twice, okay? And I want you to tell me what the field is and what type of field you would use. Yaomi, you get to start. Okay? And then we're dealing with a dog database, okay? So what are we going to, this is the planning that we do ahead of time.
Name,
okay? Now is that the dog name or is that the people name? Dog name. Actually, I guess we'll just use name since it's a dog database, right? And what type of a field is this going to be? There we go. Name. What kind of field will we be using? The field type. Okay, anyone?
Text.
Right. It's going to be a text field type. Okay, Andy.
Breed.
Okay. Type?
Number. No.
Text. Okay. Callie.
Owner.
Okay. Type? Rob.
Class.
Okay. Now what is that?
That's a text box.
Okay.
Place.
Place meaning what?
The address of the dog.
The dog, okay.
Six.
Now address now, okay. Now is that something we're going to be, do we need that? Is that, I guess. What do you think? Do you think address?
No, because of owner.
Huh?
The dog should be together with the owner.
The dog should be with the owner. Chances are good. Okay. So, okay, I'll tell you what. For address, we'll put city, state. That way you can mail them their ribbon, right? Zip. What is this? Text? Now, why would you use text instead of number?
Because you're not doing a calculation.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, if it was a number, would that be a problem? Yeah, okay. So if you used number, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yes.
But, you know, tech, you don't need to use it as a number because you're not going to do the calculations. Okay, now, he got address. What's another one?
City.
We got it. I got city, state, zip.
Wait.
For what?
Of the owner.
Okay, what is that? You going to do a calculation on it?
I may.
Okay, Callie.
Entry number,
okay.
Under.
Now, special point here. What's special about this field?
That could be our defining field.
Which is called?
Primary
field, right. But you were going to say that, right?
I was doing other people.
I know, you're just wonderful that way. Okay, and that's actually, I think that's text.
Can we auto number that?
Oh, we can auto number it. Let's auto number it. One more, sir.
They're AKC numbers.
AK. Oh, I'm impressed.
I'm a registered breeder of Beagle.
Excellent.
So.
Okay. And that's another text?
Yeah, we wouldn't make calculations. So no. Okay.
Now, if we have an AKC number, would they all have to have AKC numbers?
Yeah, you have to be.
Okay, so that means they have an AKC number. Do we need an entry number?
Yeah, probably, just for simplification. I mean, it's like a social security number. It's like a 9-digit number.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm just thinking those little ribbons to wear under the person's little thing on them. I don't know, I'm watching me dog food videos.
Okay, so this is the process, right? Okay. Like I said, we've got more than eight, actually. Okay, so let's go through the process that we would go through to create it. Yes. Tell you what. Using these, what I really wanted to do is I just wanted to present this and have you guys start creating a database. Can you do that in 10 minutes? Go to it. You two guys and you two. In other words, I want you both working on the same computer. And what we want to do is we want you to enter the fields with the types, and then we want you to also create a form. And you can be fancy with the form if you want. And those of you in TV land, I'm going to put you on hold. Pause. At this time, what the students are doing is they've paired up, and they are now in the process of creating a database. We're using the probably 10, 11 fields that as a group we came up with. They were creating a database for a dog show. And we're doing this because it's an application of the skills that they've learned in the first three chapters of the book that we've been going through. And they're doing a pretty good job. They found that using the form wizard is a good thing to do. Quite easy, good to do.